From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Wednesday edition, day four of the impeachment hearings, and 6 out of 10 voters are now saying the hearings are more important to the media than to them. We'll get an update from Louisiana Congressman Ralph Abraham, who is on the House floor, actually, right now. What issues are important to voters? One is the potential resurrection of ISIS in the Middle East. We'll talk about the latest out of Syria and Iraq. And as I have said with the media's fixation on the impeachment theater, I'm going to continue to draw attention to the other issues, which we ignore at our own peril. Now, at present, a United Nations arms embargo has prevented Iran from enhancing its military with modern aircraft and tanks. Well, this UN embargo expires next year. And reports are Iran is poised to purchase the latest military hardware from Russia and China. What would this mean to the balance of power in the Middle East? Our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin is here with the answer. And the contrast between the nation's two major political parties becomes more pronounced with each passing day. On Monday, an Association of Democratic State Attorneys General became the first national party committee to impose an explicit abortion litmus test on its candidates. The Democratic Attorneys General Association announced it will refuse to endorse anyone who does not support abortion rights and expanding access to abortion. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is here on that story. And yesterday, I don't know if you caught this or not, it was International Men's Day. Well, to celebrate the day, the ACLU tweeted the following, quote, "There's no one way to be a man. Men who get their periods are men. Men who get pregnant and give birth are men. Trans and non-binary men belong. Hashtag International Men's Day. Hashtag what universe are you in?" This lunacy underscores the need for what FRC held this past weekend in Cincinnati, Ohio, the Stand Courageous Men's Conference. There are more to come. And General Boykin and Scott Hurley, our Vice President for Development, join me for what I'm sure will be a lively conversation. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, the Washington Times is reporting that the news media has an appetite for the impeachment hearings against President Trump, and it appears that many journalists are now not attempting to quell that craving. This trend is not lost on voters who must bear witness to the relentless coverage that is often repetitive and loaded with the anti-Trump narrative of the day or strategic buzzwords like collusion, bribery, quid pro quo. It is most interesting to note that 6 out of 10 voters now agree that the impeachment hearings are more important to the media than they are to voters. Even 44% of Democrats agree with that. So says a new Politico Morning Consult poll conducted over the first week of the hearings. Joining me now from Capitol Hill is Congressman Ralph Abraham, who represents the 5th District of Louisiana. He serves on the Armed Services Committee. Congressman Abraham, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tony.
And I know that you are right up against votes, so if you have to run, just tell me. But I want to get your sense of today's impeachment hearing, day four, more theater there on Capitol Hill. Anything new?
No, not really. It's still pretty much everything's a joke. This European Union Ambassador Sondland has changed his story more than once. But he specifically said today that the president didn't want anything as far as a trade to give aid to Ukraine. He was going to give it. And, again, I think it was actually a good day for the president. And moving forward, the kangaroo court of Adam Schiff, you have to start, as they have done, with a presumption of guilt. Right. You have to believe third and fourth hand accounts. And you have to rely on baseless presumptions. I mean, look at the Lieutenant Colonel's testimony yesterday. I think he said he presumed that something has happened. And there has been no solid facts, because there are no solid facts, that this was a quid pro issue. So the president is going to be exonerated. Unfortunately, don't think the Democrats are going to take that into account, that there's no hard evidence. I hope they do not bring articles of impeachment. If they do, of course, I will certainly vote against it.
You mentioned Sondland's comments about quid pro quo. I actually have that soundbite. Let's play cut number two, please.
I finally called the president. I believe it was on the 9th of September. I can't find the records, and they won't provide them to me. But I believe I just asked him an open-ended question, Mr. Chairman. What do you want from Ukraine? I keep hearing all these different ideas and theories and this and that. What do you want? And it was a very short, abrupt conversation. He was not in a good mood. And he just said, I want nothing. I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo. Tell Zelensky to do the right thing. Something to that effect.
I mean, that sounds pretty straightforward to me.
There you go. What more could you ask for? I mean, that's a straight question, and you got a straight answer. And again, the president, by that one statement alone, you know, should be blameless. And he has done what presidents are supposed to do. He is watching out for taxpayers' money. Good for him. He's actually doing his job.
Right. By the way, and this is the last point I'll make on this because we'll move along, because as I've said before, I'm not going to join the media in being fixated on this because I think we do so at our own peril because we ignore the other issues. But you mentioned the president's responsibility to ferret out corruption. You serve on the Armed Services Committee. You oversee the National Defense Authorization Act, comes through your committee. In the 2016 bill that was signed or went into a law for 2017, it specifically told the president to certify that there was not corruption before releasing resources and military aid into Ukraine.
Absolutely. I think it would be a dereliction of duty if we didn't do that and if we didn't require taxpayers' money to be used wisely and at the, you know, at the discretion of the taxpayer. We want to protect them. That's what we're paid to do as representatives up here of Congress. And that's certainly what the president wants to do in his position, is protect the taxpayer.
Well, I want to move on, Congressman Abraham, to another issue that concerns me and I think concerns a lot of folks. I certainly know that Lindsey Graham was concerned about this and reports this coming out this week from actually Iraqi military intelligence suggesting that ISIS, some that have been in the prisons there in ISIS, escaped in Syria, crossing over to Turkey, are regrouping and pose a threat not only in the Middle East but elsewhere?
Well, perhaps. The data and the information that I'm getting from some briefings doesn't necessarily say that. I know what the DIA is saying as far as a potential for them to regroup, and I know that the DIA said that maybe killing al-Baghdadi was a major blow, but not enough to keep them from regrouping. What I can tell you is that we certainly have resources, we have assets in places where they need to be that will prevent that as much as possible.
I mean, what is the latest that you're getting on the northeast Syrian front where Turkish forces are going over? I mean, I'm concerned. I was talking to someone who is on the ground there in Syria. Now, for the last few days, there actually has been a ceasefire, no hostilities. But still grave concern over the future plight of the religious minorities in that area.
Exactly. You know, there have been certainly in the Kurdistan region, whether it's the Iraqi Kurdistan or the Syrian Kurdistan region, we had at one point numbers of about 1.5 million Christians over there. But because of the turmoil, not just from Turkey, but the turmoil in the region, then what we have seen is that that number of Christians in that particular area has been reduced maybe to 500,000. So, you know, as Christians here in America, we've got to watch out for them. I actually had lunch with the foreign minister of Kurdistan today. The alliance between the Kurds and the Americans are still strong. They are still very grateful of what we're doing in the region, and that alliance will get stronger and stronger.
It's good to hear. I know in a briefing I was at the White House, one of the reasons our troops are guarding the oil fields there in Syria is that revenue continues to fund that autonomous government and that defense there by the Kurdish and the Syrian forces.
That's right. That, you know, that is the main source of income for the Iraqi Kurds, for sure, is the oil revenues. The issue is that that oil has to go through Turkey, because Turkey's not a buyer of that oil. The oil is sold on the international market. But there has to be, taxes paid and tariffs paid to Turkey to move that oil from Iraqi Kurdistan through those pipelines onto being shipped internationally.
Is there any fear that Turkey may shut that down?
Not right now. The thing that we've got to be careful of on our end of the stick here in America is shutting down banks that our friends in Kurdistan need to move that oil and be able to receive payment for that oil. So, you know, there was a vote last week on the Ex-Im Bank. Unfortunately, I think it passed on our side because the Democrats all voted for it. But there are a lot of things in there that we have to be very careful of, that, that we don't hurt our friends over there just by, throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly, I know you've got some votes coming up, but in your meeting with the foreign minister, and you say that the ties are strong, and I agree with that. I mean, they're looking to America as one of their strongest allies. But is there any sense that by us pulling out, allowing Turkey to come in, is that going to be a problem long term for that relationship?
No, I don't think so. Again, we go back to, the different groups of Kurds, the Iraqi Kurds, they are solid with us. The PPK Kurds, when they came in to the YPG, these acronyms get very confusing. But, the PPK did have some Terrorist Act players in there. They somewhat diluted that those Kurds on the Syrian-Turkish border. That really clouded the arena, so to speak, and therein lies the issue as to what groups mingle with what groups and which groups throw in with what groups at a particular time, because they may be in today, but tomorrow they may be separate groups. So it's a complicated issue over there. But my concern is for the Kurdistan region, not only the Iraqi Kurdistan, but certainly the Syrian Kurdistan region. I'm concerned that what Turkey is going to do is move the IDF, the dependent forces over there, the people that have been the refugees, into that border between Syria and Turkey and use them as a buffer. And, that's certainly not what we want to happen.
Yeah, I am in agreement with you on that. Congressman Abraham, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you stepping off the House floor to talk with us.
You guys have a great day. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, it is quite complicated with all the acronyms and the different groups over there. You almost have to have a flow chart to chart it out as you talk about it. But the where we stay focused in that northeastern region and the autonomous government is where religious freedom is rooted. And I was talking with someone over there today. There has been a halt in the hostilities, but it continues to be an area of a focus, and we can't take our eye off of that. There's another thing we can't take our eye off, and that is Iran updating its military hardware. Next year, a UN embargo will be lifted, is scheduled to be lifted, and could pave the way for new equipment for Iran. General Boykin is here next to talk about it.
Abortion is one of the most combative and sensitive moral and political questions in America today, even among Christians. There has been a renewed effort in theological liberal Christian circles to argue that the Bible does not oppose abortion. In light of these arguments, it is crucial for Christians to know what the Bible actually says about abortion. Does the Bible teach that life begins at conception or birth? Is abortion murder? In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Pro-Life Engagement, Personhood, Scripture, and Church History, author David Claussen addresses these questions with relevant passages in the Bible that inform how a Christian should think about abortion, the question of personhood, and a survey of how prominent church leaders have interpreted these passages throughout history. Learn more by visiting frc.org/unborn. That's frc.org/unborn. Meadow Pollock was a high school senior who was tragically gunned down during the Parkland school shooting in Florida. In an emotional and gripping FRC Speaker Series event, her father, Andrew Pollock, and education expert Max Eden discussed the tragic massacre and the politically correct policies that allowed the Parkland shooting to happen. The Southern Poverty Law Center and the Obama administration promoted a false narrative that teachers and principals were racist and couldn't be trusted to enforce rules with consequences. Instead, they argued for healing circles and restorative justice. These policies enabled a psychopathic criminal to maintain a clean background and purchase a firearm used to murder 17 people at the high school. The Obama administration forced these leniency policies into hundreds of schools, serving millions of students across America. To listen to this event and to learn more, visit frc.org/speakers. That's frc.org/speakers.
Religious liberty is one of the most important yet misunderstood issues in America. There's a growing perception that protecting religious liberty is an attempt to lawfully allow bigotry and prejudice. Therefore, Christians need to be able to articulate with greater clarity and persuasiveness why they support religious liberty. Biblical Principles for Religious Liberty, Evidence from Scripture and Church History, is a new publication from Family Research Council that presents biblical and theological arguments for why religious liberty is worth defending and encourages Christians to engage in the fight to preserve America's first freedom. This publication presents key biblical texts that support a broad understanding of religious freedom and key theological arguments based on those texts. In an increasingly secular world, Christians must understand and advocate for religious liberty. Learn more by visiting frc.org/belief.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. All right, according to an analyst with the Defense Intelligence Agency, speaking earlier this week, it is very likely that Iran will buy new advanced fighter jets and tanks next year, when a United Nations arms embargo is scheduled to be lifted. The senior U.S. intelligence official released this new assessment of Iran's military capabilities, saying that they've actually improved their capabilities over the last couple of decades, but their budget cuts or budget the budget deficits that they're experiencing currently right now is limited their military spending. However, their hardware goes back to the 1970s, and if this embargo is lifted, it could change the balance of power in the Middle East. Joining me now to talk about it is Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, retired from the United States Army after 36 and a half years, his last 4 years as the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, and as you know, he's one of the original members of the Army's Delta Force. He is now the Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. So good to be on.
Now, the Defense Intelligence Agency report concludes that Tehran is committed to becoming the dominant power in the Middle East, and it warns that the Islamic Republic is making rapid progress, developing attack drones and other missile systems. You think that's accurate?
Yeah, I do. I tell you, this is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, they have deeply and highly classified information on the Iranians and what they're doing. And the DIA, I think, is one of the best intel agencies in our government, in our intel structure. They're very analytical, and they've been doing this since 1962. So this is the tip of the iceberg. And I think that when they put out a report like this, we need to pay attention, because under this administration, it is not political. This is not about politics. This is about real threats towards America, and I think they've nailed it here.
Now, Iran uses, as I mentioned earlier, 1970s-era Soviet tanks, a number of older fighter aircraft, according to the Defense Intelligence Agency report. they would be able to modernize up to the latest technology with through purchasing Chinese technology and Russian technology. How would this shift the balance of power in the Middle East?
Well, you just look across the Persian Gulf. The Gulf states, with the exception of Bahrain, are almost exclusively Sunni Muslims. Bahrain is about 70 to 80% Shia. But the Iranians are the mighty Shia empire. They're the ancient Persians. And there's always been a rift between Persians and Arabs, as well as Sunnis and Shias. The Iranians and the Shias have never dominated Islam. They've never dominated the Middle East. But with this kind of power, to include a nascent nuclear program, which we know that they've been working on for a long time, clearly they become the big dogs in the Middle East, because with the exception of Israel, that would be the only nuclear power there, and they would have the most modern technology of any of the Middle Eastern countries there when they got sophisticated aircraft as well as sophisticated tanks and other types of mobility as well as firepower.
And arguably the most radicalized government of any of the countries in the Middle East.
Yeah. Now, what mitigates this here is right now Iran is going through an awful internal uprising. In fact, I heard someone in a meeting I was in today say that they've killed a lot of people over there just in the last week.
Right, which is why on day before yesterday, I guess it was Monday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announcing sanctions against those individuals that are identified for killing civilians.
No, that's exactly right. And look, you can't sanction Iran too much. Yeah. You know, the people suffer, but it's also the people that ultimately rise up and make a change in their government.
But in part, this rising up that is actually happening there is in large part due to the sanctions that the United States has placed on them, which prohibits them from selling their oil. It's prohibiting these other countries from doing business with them and such. And so, you know, they've raised the price of gasoline. They are having a lot of unrest in there, which is destabilizing, which could be the greatest hope for bringing down that regime would be internally.
Yeah, that's right. And the only reason they haven't already succeeded in bringing it down is because of the IRGC, Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. They are the big dogs on the block. In fact, they are almost have become autonomous because they own industries. They are very powerful. They have all the military capabilities, but they also are very deeply embedded in the economy there. And there are people making a lot of money. I mean, senior generals are making a lot of money in the IRGC. But ultimately, that's going to run out too, and that's when this government's going to collapse. It's going to implode. It's going to fall from within. And that America needs to be ready for that.
Before we run out of time, what needs to happen to ensure these embargoes are not lifted, that it remains in place to prohibit them from getting this new weaponry?
Yeah, I think it may be too late, Tony, but what they need to do is go back to the UN Security Council and ask for a resolution to continue this embargo and continue it maybe indefinitely, but I'm sure they would want to set a date certain. But we know that even while this embargo has been in place, we know that they have continued to test missiles, which was a violation of this so-called 2015 agreement with the Iranians, you know, the deal, the Iran deal, as we call it. We know they violated that, and it wasn't but just, 3 months later that they took two of our boats off the coast of Iran there, not in Iranian waters, in international waters, and humiliated them and humiliated America. So they were never serious about this thing. Right. And I think that we need to go back and ask for an extension of the embargo.
All right, General, thanks so much for joining us. I know you're going to actually be back in just a bit as we talk about the Stand Courageous Conference.
Yeah.
But before then, coming up next, one of the first time this ever happened, a major political party stating a litmus test on abortion to support candidates. The contrast between the two parties is becoming clearer and clearer every day. Attorney General for the state of Texas, Ken Paxton, joins me next. Don't go away.
The topic of sexual sin can be difficult to discuss in the church, but it's something that needs to be addressed. To help inform this conversation, FRC has a new publication for church leaders called Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure. In it, Dr. Jesse Gill, a licensed psychologist, specifically addresses sexual sin and the susceptibility of those in church leadership. He discusses the contributing factors to moral failure, a practical understanding of our sexual nature, and a call for Christian leaders to increase their dependency on Christ. The principles found in this publication will instruct leaders in meeting their emotional, relational, and even sexual needs in healthy ways so that there will be less of a foothold for temptation. Safeguard Your Ministry for Moral Failure is a must-read for everyone involved in church ministry. To read the publication and learn more, visit frc.org/safeguard. That's frc.org/safeguard.
Are you a parent of a school-aged child? If so, then you understand that navigating your educational system is one of the biggest challenges facing families across the United States today. Family Research Council's new publication titled The SPLC's Teaching Tolerance, What Parents, Teachers, and Administrators Need to Know, helps parents identify and monitor a specific agenda that is being pushed on their children in public schools. The highly partisan left-wing Southern Poverty Law Center is one of the greatest offenders on this front with their program titled Teaching Tolerance. This program is designed to infiltrate schools with radically progressive education resources that undermine Christian values about marriage and family. FRC's brochure outlines the content within the SPLC's Teaching Tolerance Project and empowers parents to protect their children against the SPLC's agenda. Learn more at frc.org/teachingtolerance. That's frc.org/teachingtolerance.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. An Association of Democratic State Attorneys General will become the first National Party committee to impose an explicit abortion litmus test on its candidates. They announced this Monday that they will refuse to endorse anyone who does not support, quote unquote, reproductive rights and expanding access to abortion services, end quote. The contrast between the nation's two major political parties becomes clear and clear with each passing day. Joining me now with his reaction is the Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, who's been leading out on a number of issues across the country among his Republican colleagues that serve as attorneys general. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So, General Paxton, are you surprised by this development that you actually have the Democratic Attorneys General Association saying we will only support those candidates who pledge their support for abortion and expanding abortion?
I guess it's not surprising in some sense that the Democratic Party tends to be leaning more and more left on this issue. However, you think of attorneys general, you think about rule of law and following the law. And in this case, they're advocating for attorneys general to basically ignore the law and take a position that is maybe in opposition to your own state's law. So I find that very troubling because that doesn't just relate to abortion. But now, what other issues are they going to decide that, you know, they're not going to enforce because they don't personally like a law?
Yeah, I mean, the role of the attorney general for a state is essentially to be the lawyer for the legislature, the governor, to be the, in some cases, the chief law enforcement officer, but it's to enforce the law. You don't write the law. You don't pick the law. You enforce the law. So what happens if a state has a pro-life law that is duly enacted, challenged in court, but you have an attorney general who's taken a pledge that they will only support the expansion of abortion? What does that state do?
I don't know. I mean, the legislature, I guess, is going to have to hire outside counsel and expend other resources on defending their laws. And it's a very troubling precedent. I mean, I was starting with abortion, but who knows where else this goes when we have state lawyers deciding policy and what they're going to enforce and not going to enforce, it turns the rule of law on its head. And obviously, as a lawyer, it's very troubling for me.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure this out, what this looks like. I mean, if they start carving out this territory, saying, hey, this is where we stand, and, you know, we're not going to do the job that the voters elected us to do, I would think that they would be backing themselves, painting themselves into a corner, and this could, I would think, certainly be used against them in elections.
Well, I was actually around a few retired attorney generals that were Democrats. This weekend, we had a conference of Republican attorney generals, and many of them were shocked and horrified that their party would adopt a litmus test. It's just very intolerant of other views, and that's supposedly the claim of the Democratic Party, that they're tolerant on all kinds of views. But apparently on this one, there is no tolerance. There is no room for disagreement. You either have to agree with them or you're not going to get their support.
I mean, you're in a pro-life state. Texas is led out, as Louisiana and Mississippi, some other states, on life issues. I mean, is this in part a desperate reaction by the Democratic Party to this pro-life wave that's moving across America?
You know, it may well be. It's just interesting to me that it's attorneys that are governed by the rule of law that have. It's not like they had to lead on this issue, and for some reason, they've decided that it's their job to lead on an issue, and it puts them in sort of contradiction to themselves.
But we know that there are special interest groups like George Soros and others from the left that have kind of shifted their focus beyond some of the other elections to. They were looking at Secretary of State elections because they oversee the elections, but they've also been targeting the attorney generals because the attorney generals defend the laws of the state. Are they looking for a way to short circuit the process by trying to take these attorney generals out of the process of defending state laws?
Well, that certainly looks like what's going on, because if you're supporting groups of attorney now, an entire organization, almost all of the Democratic AGs, I assume, are part of this group. And so now none of them are going to stand up for the rule of law. If their state has an abortion law, they're apparently not going to defend us. At least that's what it looks like on its face. So, yeah, that would short circuit the process of what you would expect in representative government and the legislature having control over the laws, and the attorney generals like me are supposed to enforce. And I get to enforce laws all the time that I don't necessarily agree with, but that's my job. I have to enforce the law.
Right, right. Absolutely. It's up to the legislature to make the law, the governor to sign it into law, and the attorney general to defend it.
That's exactly right.
Well, Attorney General Ken Paxton, thanks so much for joining us. As always, good to talk to you, and appreciate the work you do in the Lone Star State.
Yeah, have a great day. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Attorney General Ken Paxton of Texas. Actually, really a leader among conservative attorneys general. All right, when we come back, yesterday was International Man's Day. How did the ACLU celebrate it? Well, we talk about it next with the general and Scott Hurley, Vice President of Development here at the Family Research Council, as we talk about the Stand Courageous Men's Conference we had this past weekend. Don't go away. News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155. This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. I mentioned this yesterday. I want to clarify something I said yesterday. I had Mike Huckabee on. We were talking about Chick-fil-A and discussing, you know, that whole thing. And I wrote more about it today. I'm not going to talk about it today, but I did write about it in the update. If you get the update, you'll see what we had to say as more information came out. We did mention Red Kettle Appreciation Day, and that is Salvation Army that was basically thrown under the bus by Chick-fil-A. We're going to encourage folks on December the 9th, you'll hear more about this, but on December the 9th, to skip that chicken sandwich and drop some change in the red kettle for the Salvation Army. But I mentioned this, I commented on something that Mike Huckabee said yesterday and it needs clarification. He said he doesn't support boycotts, and I said I don't either. We don't organize boycotts here. That's not something we do at the Family Research Council. I'm not a big supporter of the concept of organized boycotts. But that said, we do believe in stewardship. And so, you know, we have, because people ask me about this afterwards, we've encouraged people to use Second Vote as a resource in terms of how corporations use your profits and what they use it for, oftentimes against the values that you have. And so from that standpoint, yes, I believe in good stewardship. We just don't necessarily organize boycotts here. But like we encourage people to use the Second Vote app, you know, not to shop at places like Target, Starbucks that supports abortion. So I encourage you to be a good steward of your resources and support those who support your values. I just wanted to clarify that point. All right. As I mentioned earlier, yesterday was International Men's Day. I don't know how many of you knew that or celebrated it, but the ACLU celebrated it. And here's what they said in a tweet. There's no one way to be a man. Men who get their periods are men. Men who get pregnant and give birth are men. Trans and non-binary men belong. Hashtag International Men's Day. Yes. This underscores how essential it is that the Family Research Council continues to host our Stand Courageous events like the one we held in Ohio this past weekend. This underscores the need. This is hashtag lunacy. Joining me now to talk about this back in the studio, actually he never left, is Executive Vice President of the Family Research Council, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, and our Vice President of Policy, Scott Hurley. Gentlemen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
All right, and to put a fine point on this, the ACLU, this is a quote unquote mainstream group. Yet in their tweet, they fail to understand what a man is. I mean, this is how far this lunacy has gone. And General, I'm going to start with you. When you first heard that tweet this morning, your reaction?
I don't think we will talk about that on the radio, but look, they live in a parallel universe. I mean, this is so insane that I don't even know what to say about it, that you say that a man has a baby, a man can have a baby. That is lunacy. And these people are, I think, so far out there drinking their own bathwater that they don't have a clue what reality really is. It is about feelings and not about fact.
Yeah, I think of the proverb where it says, you know, don't answer a fool.
But don't cast your pearls before swine, and that's what, you know, trying to even engage them on
right.
this stuff.
But it also, you know, Proverbs also says we should speak forcefully to those who speak foolishness for the sake of those that may be blinded by this. I mean, Scott, this really does underscore what happened this weekend and why the Family Research Council is conducting a series of men's conferences across the nation.
Yeah, Tony, that is so true. You know, the cultural narrative is just eluding people like crazy. But this past weekend, it was a real joy to be with you in general and some amazing Christian leaders. We heard some inspiring messages, and it was great to see men humble and hungry for God as they worship the Lord, and people responding in faith to what the Lord is calling a biblical manhood to be about.
General, give our listeners, I know we talked a little bit about it last week and the week before that, but give our, because we've got several of these coming up. In fact, I'm going to run down them real quick, and then I want you to kind of give us, give our listeners kind of a thumbnail sketch of what these Stand Courageous conferences are and why we're doing them. Jefferson Baptist Church in my home city of Baton Rouge, January the 10th and 11th. We're going to be in Kernersville, North Carolina, January the 24th through the 25th. Then January 31st to February, February 1st, these are Friday and Saturday nights, we'll be at Marcus Point Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. New Hope Ministries in Naples, Florida, March 6th through the 7th. And we've got some others coming up as well. We have about a dozen.
Got one in Detroit, too.
Yeah, got one in Detroit coming up, and that's in June. But we got some others sprinkled in there as well. We just haven't locked in the exact locations. But you can find out more. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. So what's behind this, General?
Well, I think that we here at the Family Research Council have recognized that families are falling apart. I mean, we are the Family Research Council, and families are falling apart because men are suffering. Men are hurting. It's not just that they're walking away from their families and not being the fathers that they're meant to be, but they're tied up with so many distractions. And what we've discovered in the conferences now is that men are just waiting to unload that, to get rid of right. the baggage. And obviously porn is one of the leading distractions of men, but it's not just that, you know. It's games and, you know, computer games and you know, extramarital affairs and all of that kind of thing.
Men, masculinity, biblical masculinity is under assault. It has been. I mean, we talked about that. This has been a steady flow for the last few decades, but it's intensified. I mean, it's intensified to where International Men's Day mm-hmm. becomes a platform for spewing forth this transgender nonsense.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And look, what we're doing is we're very countercultural. In fact, we have an FRC book coming out. It's called Man to Man. I'm the primary author, but I'm not the sole author of this thing. And it's called Man to Man, and we're coming right at
men. Now, what kind of men?
Real men. I mean, masculine men. The subtitle is Rediscovering Masculinity in a Confused World, because we are recognizing that men don't know what masculinity is all about.
You going to send a copy to the ACLU?
I'd love to send a copy to the ACLU, and I doubt if they would read it, but the only reason they would read it would be to criticize me, you know, to go after me. So maybe it's a good idea to send them one. But look, as the publisher of this book said to me, this is countercultural. And I said, yeah, it is, and that's what it's intended to be. And we're coming at men from a biblical perspective, but this is not a preachy book. And our conferences are not not preaching sermons.
These are real men talking
these
to
real men. These are
real
men talking to real men, and the first thing we tell them when we get there is we're just like you.
And no women allowed.
There's no women in these conferences. This is about men. And we're getting a great response to the messages, but we've got people in these conferences like Bishop Larry Jackson, you know, with Promise Keepers for 20 years, you know, and he's got a fiery message, you know, and Stu Weber, who wrote probably the best book for men that's ever been written called Tender Warriors, and he was with Promise Keepers for probably about 20 years.
Green Beret in
Vietnam. Yeah, Green Beret in Vietnam. We've got a good lineup of people, and we really see this as ministering to them, not just speaking to them.
You know, Scott, we've already gotten some great feedback from the event this past weekend. Of one said, I want to get serious about this, about their faith. I've played around with being a Christian. I'm ready to be all in. I want to go all the way with the Lord. And a millennial, younger guy that was there, said, I'm struggling and want to be free from pornography. Ron, one of the attendees, said, the event was absolutely outstanding. The speakers were great, and I'm looking forward to a long-term involvement with the philosophy and objectives of Stand Courageous. This is not just a one-time event, but there's some takeaways that are helping these guys grow in their faith and be the influencers in their family and beyond.
You bet, Tony. In fact, it was so powerful to watch men come forward as they responded to the invitation. And some men came crying with heavy loads. And we had people across the front praying with people. Some people gave their life to Christ for the first time.
Right.
Others rededicated their life and said, listen, I've been messing up, and now I'm all in for Christ. And then another powerful moment was the fatherly blessing. And it was great to see some fathers with their sons come forward, once again just crying as they were sensing what God was doing in this moment. So, yeah, we really pray that men in the cities where we're going will step up and participate. It will change your life, to be sure.
You know, General, you said that we're countercultural. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's actually what being a Christian is. You know, what they said about the disciples, they turned the world upside down. Mm-hmm. And that's literally, we're going against the flow. Mm-hmm. But that's what we've got to do. And that's what, if we want to save our children from the destructive forces of this culture, we're going to have to go against the culture. And I think the message to the men was, it's time for you to stand up, stand courageous, and stand between the culture and the immorality that wants your children and protect them.
Yeah. And if you go back to what you read here at the beginning of this program, coming out of the ACLU, and then you reflect on how David called his son to his bedside as he was dying, and said, I'm going on to be with the fathers, but prove yourself a man. Well, in that era, and in the time when I was growing up, when you said a man, it had meaning. You knew what people meant. And men were come out of the womb designed to be warriors. I'm not talking about going out with baseball bats and AR-15s. But I'm talking about having a cause. As a warrior, you have a cause that you're willing to sacrifice for. You may even have to die for it.
Right. And it's not – I know we talk about warrior and, you know, your first – your mind goes to – I mean, you're Army veteran. I'm a Marine veteran. I mean, you think about conflict – you call about military conflict.
Right.
That's not the only aspect of warrior. Warrior is being a defender, a protector, standing for those things that are worth defending. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean physical –
no.
In fact, where we are challenging the men most, it's spiritual.
It is absolutely spiritual. And that is I think, something that people don't understand, because we don't talk about spiritual warfare in our sermons very much anymore. We don't talk about that in our men's group.
It's not politically correct to talk about warfare.
No, that's right. Exactly. But
read Paul.
That's right. Our adversary Satan, like a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he might devour. Now, that is very clear that we're in a spiritual battle. When we come into a relationship with Jesus Christ, we're in a spiritual battle. And you better learn how to put that armor on. You better learn how to stand in the battle, stand toe-to-toe with the enemy, because as Psalms 94 says, who will rise up against this evil for me? Who will take a stand against these evildoers? That's us, the Christians, and especially the men.
Right.
They have to stand against evil. There's evil in the land.
And in order to do that, we have to stand courageous. And if there was ever a time, Scott Hurley, it's now.
Amen to that. And, you know, Tony, with the Lord, as Scripture says, all things are possible for him who believes. And we believe in a mighty God, and we believe the victory is already his. And so he's calling us to trust him. And just like David shared when he went into the battlefield against Goliath, he said, the battle is the Lord's. And so we declare that as well, that as long as we're aligned with the Lord and standing for biblical truth, God is going to take care of his business.
And, you know, we have a number of breakout sessions that go along with the general session speeches. It starts Friday night, goes through most of the day on Saturday. In fact, you know, feedback from law enforcement officers that were there, that's a community that is really struggling.
Yeah.
And so we're gonna devise a new breakout session just for first responders, law enforcement, other first responders, and active military.
Yeah, and you know I tell you, it's so sad the way law enforcement people are treated today. You know, and they're hurting too. They are hurting just because they don't get the respect that they're due.
Right. And the very thing that can be the strength that they need to deal with all of the things that they deal with is faith, is a relationship with God, helps put all the pieces together. And again, we're seeing this marginalization of Christianity and faith in the public sector.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's sad, but we're doing our part.
And folks, to find out how you can be a part of these, go to the website tonyperkins.com and check out the nearest event scheduled for where you live. All right, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. General Scott, thanks for being here. And thank you, folks, for being here as well. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prepared, when you've prayed, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.